Mason McTavish wants to be in Anaheim long term. He wants that $8 million deal, and the Ducks are not willing to give it to him.
The way I see the specific division really is that you have Vegas, obviously, at the top, like clear cut, I think the best team in that division. And then LA and Edmonton are kind of in that same area. I think Edmonton got a little bit worse this offseason. And then you got like three, four teams like Seattle, Calgary, Vancouver, and Anaheim, I would say, that are really kind of all bunched together.
Welcome to the Checking From Behind podcast, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. I'm your host, Zach, as always, joined by my co-host, Preston. We have an absolute banger of an episode coming for you beauties. It's the last part of our season previews with the Pacific Division. However, though, we are going to be going over some quick NHL news. Let's start off with some more positive news real quick, with the Wild and the San Jose Sharks both revealing new jerseys. And I know in our little group chat with one of our buddies, I said the Wild jerseys were not that great. I completely changed my stance on that. I'm not going to lie, I absolutely love them by taking, you know, more of a deeper look into it. And I honestly think they are some of the best jerseys that came out this entire year. I still don't think that any jerseys will top what the Blues came out with earlier in the offseason, but I think the Wild are right up there. And if we're doing like a tier list, I think they're borderline S tier at this point.
Yeah, they're nice jerseys. They're fine. Yeah, I mean, they're pretty much exactly what they used to wear back when they first came to the league. I think it was 2002, 2001 when they got put back into the league. So these are their original jerseys. I like them. I just, the jersey had just so off-putting to me. It just stands out so much in that jersey. I don't like the jersey ads. I never will. But yeah, I have no issues with it.
Yeah, and with the San Jose Sharks, that came out like yesterday or today or something like that. I don't mind the jersey. It's not a jersey that I'll go out and I have to go get a style of the jersey, but it's a jersey where it's, I like it. I don't hate it at all. And honestly, with all of these jerseys that have come out, none of them are really ones that you look at them and it's like, this is fucking horrendous, outside of maybe the Oilers one, but I like the Oilers ones. And that has a lot of mixed reviews. And
I'm not a fan of the Oilers ones.
Yeah. I can see why, with the cream color and everything, but back to the Sharks. The Sharks jerseys, I overall think, are pretty solid.
I mean, these look straight out of the 90s, man. I mean, the jerseys, man. The backs are really weird. They look like practice jerseys to me, if I'm going to be honest with you.
Really?
But, yeah.
I don't know. I never really caught that vibe from the jerseys. I do feel like, I mean, they are the, I believe, heritage jerseys or something for the Sharks. Mm-hmm. So they do give me a throwback feel to it. And I like the throwback feel to it. Kind of bring, like you said, has a 90s vibe and 90s feel to it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So some devastating news coming out of Sunrise, Florida. Alexander Barkov will be missing 7 to 9 months minimum due to a torn ACL. That's a huge blow for the Panthers. Not only is he out for the start of the season, you know, we all know Matthew Tkachuk won't be back until January-ish around there, but he has a chance to play in the Olympics, right? Barkov is not going to be playing for Team Finland in the Olympics. Instead, he will be rehabbing that knee. He's having surgery on it, and this is just a tough blow for the Panthers, man.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Didn't look like there was contact on the knee. Just kind of gave out on him. Had to be helped off the ice immediately. Never good when anything like that happens. You know, hoping for a fast recovery. This is a really big deal for the Panthers, though. I think this really changes a lot of things going into the season, because they already knew they were going to be missing Matthew Tkachuk till probably sometime in December at the earliest. Mm-hmm. And now you have Barkov off for at least the regular season. I think this radically changes. I originally had them win in the Atlantic Division. I still think they're a playoff team. I think they're either going to be third place in that division or potentially a wild card team, to be honest with you. I think this hurts them that much.
They lost their best two players on the team, for being frankly honest with you, for at least 40 games. Obviously, you know, we all know Barkov off for the regular season, like you just said, and Matthew Tkachuk's probably going to be missing 40 to 50 games or whatever. So not only are you missing two of those guys, but also, like, this is where having so much depth now comes into play. You have to move Sam Bennett up as your first line center. Lundell is up your second line center as of right now, et cetera. You have to move everybody up a line. And still, though, you look at the top six of Verhaeghe, Bennett, and Reinhardt, that's still a first line on a lot of teams in the NHL, if I'm being completely honest with you. And then the second line, we knew Itu Lusorainen, who was a very good surprise in the playoffs for them. Anton Lundell, who is a great defensive center, can win faceoffs, but doesn't have a bunch of offensive firepower, but he doesn't really need to when he has a guy like fucking Brad Marchand on his right wing who can put the puck in the back of the net. And I know Marchand's on the older side of things, but you overall look at this depth and the Sam Reinhardt and Carter Verhaeghe and Sam Bennett, those are going to be the three guys that are really going to have to put the team on their back in a way and kind of will this team in terms of scoring and offensive firepower.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to test their depth. I mean, luckily for them, they still have pretty good center depth, and they will get Matthew Tkachuk back at some point in the regular season.
Yep.
It ended up being really a good thing they were able to keep Bennett and Marchand on forward, because Bennett's going to have to really prove that there was a reason why he won the Conn Smythe last year and, you know, bring some of that play into the regular season. But Barkov he makes such a big impact away from the puck too. It's impossible to replace a guy like that. And I think the Panthers are going to struggle a little bit more defensively. Not to say that they're going to be bad defensively, but when you have a center that can just erase other guys, like other star players off the ice, you can't replace that.
It makes a huge difference. And there's nobody on this team, and there's 99% of players in the league cannot do what Barkov does at the center position, offensively and defensively. And before we get into our previews, you brought up that he does a lot of great stuff away from the puck too. He knows how to create space away from the puck for himself and his teammates, and defensively too. He's not a center that is going to kind of float towards the blue line and kind of look for a quick breakout pass, and now he's up the ice on a 2-on-1. No, he's puck support. If you watch him closely, he's puck support 99.999% of the time. He's there for his teammates. He's in the right spot all the time, whether it's in the offensive zone, defensive zone, neutral zone. And like you said, it's going to be very hard to replace like a guy like Barkov in the lineup.
And I'd be pretty surprised, even if they do make the playoffs, I still think they're a playoff team. Don't get me wrong, but I still be surprised if he plays. I think it would have to be around maybe like the Stanley Cup final, conference final, if he were to play, because not only does he have to recover from the injury and get his strength back in his leg, but he's got to get back in game shape and everything. He's not going to be able to skate for at least a few months. So, and you don't want to rush a guy back, especially coming off an ACL injury. You want to give that time to heal properly.
Yeah, looking at the timeline right now, the 9-month mark would be, we're looking at probably May to June-ish or whatever like that. Like, that's Stanley Cup final territory right there. I know they want to be optimistic. Well, a lot of people would like to be optimistic and say if the Panthers make another deep run that he could potentially be back for the conference finals and the Stanley Cup final if they make it that far. I don't necessarily think that's more of a realistic goal. I think that's, of course, the goal that you would like to have. But if I'm the Panthers, unless he's progressing better than what you initially thought he would, I would just not play him until training camp, honestly. Get him as a full off season once he strengthens that knee back up, once he gets the surgery, et cetera, does all the rehab.
He already had the surgery today.
Yeah, okay, so. Yeah. So you get
they don't mess around with athletes. They get surgery immediately.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, granted, they have the top medical professionals in the entire world, but still. All right, let's head over to the Pacific Division season previews, the last ones of the season. Thank fucking God. So the Anaheim Ducks are coming up here on our list. Last season's record, they were 35-37-10 for 80 points. Sixth in the Pacific Division, key additions, Mikael Granlund, Peter Mrazek, Ryan Poehling, and Chris Kreider. Key subtractions, Trevor Zegras, Sean Gibson, and Robbie Fabry with Oliver Shillington as well. The only notable moves of the offseason, they re-signed Lucas Dalso to a 5x$6.5 million contract, and Drew Helison a 2x$1.1 million contract. The Anaheim Ducks this season, they're looking to potentially at least be competing for a playoff spot, because I honestly think that all their talent on their team right now, they can progress with Leo Carlson. I know you end up trading Trevor Zegras, which he needed a fresh start and everything like that. And you have a bunch of young talent. You bring in some older vets like a Chris Kreider, for example, who had a horrible year with the Rangers, a career worst year, but a lot of players on the Rangers were not that good. And he's looking to potentially just get a little bit jolt into his game and to be able to get back to that 30 goal self. And I think that the Anaheim Ducks could have a shot to compete in the playoffs, but I think it's going to be very, very hard to snag a spot when you have some teams ahead of them that I think that are just a tad better at the moment.
Yeah, the way I see the specific division really is like you have Vegas, obviously, at the top, mm-hmm. like clear cut, I think the best team in that division. And then LA and Edmonton are kind of in that same area. I think Edmonton got a little bit worse this offseason. And then you got like three, four teams like Seattle, Calgary, Vancouver, and Anaheim, I would say, that were really kind of all bunched together.
And then the Sharks.
Yeah, the Sharks, but they're still in the middle of a rebuild.
Yeah, that's true.
But the one thing you didn't mention for the Ducks is they still don't have one of their best players signed, Mason McTavish. He's still an RFA. Doesn't really seem to be clearing up. You think we're 2 weeks away from the regular season starting, and he still hasn't even practiced with the team.
He's not obviously he can't practice with the team because
I don't even know if he can go to the facility.
He can't participate in anything.
Yeah.
So right now, as of 2 weeks ago at the start of training camp, he was skating with the Ottawa 67s. There's nothing at all. These two sides are. It's almost like a complete stalemate. Yeah, like, I don't understand. I know we talked a little bit about it at the end of our Central preview, but the Anaheim Ducks don't want to pay him more than like a $3 million by $5 million deal or $5 million by $5 million or something like that. And Mason McTavish wants to be in Anaheim long term. He wants that $8 million by $8 million deal, and the Ducks are not willing to give it to him, which is very odd to me because. Me and you both, I think you would agree with me here, is I think he's one of their two franchise players right now. I think it's him and Leo Carlson at the moment.
I don't know if I put him on a franchise pedestal. I'd say he's a very good player. Like he's elite, borderline elite.
Who?
McTavish. I think the Ducks really view Carlson as that mm-hmm. centerpiece to build around. And I'm sure they're going to get an extent. We're not going to see this with Carlson going to next summer when, you know, he's an RFA and he needs his first big boy contract. They're going to get that done as soon as they can, I'm sure. But Mason McTavish, I think in a perfect world, I think he'd be a really good 2C.
Yeah, if the Ducks don't view him as a franchise player, and even if you don't view him as a franchise player, he's still a great player.
Like he's still worth keeping around. Like he's young. He's only 22 years old. He had the best season of his young career so far in 76 games, 52 points. He's just going to keep getting better. Mm-hmm. You want young guys around that, your cornerstones. You get him on long-term deals and you just don't worry about him. He's just going to keep getting better. Let him keep developing alongside Leo Carlson, Cutter Gauthier. You got a pretty solid trio of young forwards there.
Yeah, and you're not going to break the bank with Mason McTavish. You're not going to be like, okay, we're going to risk regression if we give him $8 million by $8 million deal. Like you said, he keeps getting better and better, and I don't understand why the Ducks don't want to just be like, okay, let's say it's this, okay? If the Anaheim Ducks are sitting here, and I totally get if they don't want to give him $8 million, but to sit here and say we won't even give you 7 years, 6 years, I think is egregious. This guy is going to be a great center for your team for years to come, and they're just sitting here and being like, yeah, we'll do like a 3x5 max.
They can't even get a bridge deal done either. It's not like if that's the case. To sign into a three or four year contract that and just worry about it down the future. They haven't even done that. Like, no. There's been absolutely nothing.
This feels a lot like what was going on with Marco Rossi with the Wild, except obviously they agreed on a deal a few weeks ago. But neither side, like, again, the player wants a long-term deal. The team doesn't want to give him the long-term deal. But it feels like at this point, the Ducks aren't being successful in the just being like, take this bridge deal or, you know, midterm deal and let's figure this out. Let's go win some hockey games. It's not like that right now.
Yeah, I don't understand what the Ducks' philosophy is, because Pat Verbeek, I think, has a lot of pressure on him as a GM to get this team to the playoffs. I mean, he said himself he thinks their rebuild's pretty much done, and he thinks they're ready to compete for a playoff spot right now. I don't really agree with him. They brought in Chris Kreider in the offseason with a trade with the Rangers. We'll see if he has anything left in the tank. He was not good for the Rangers last year.
Brutal.
He's going to have – I think he might benefit from having a lot less pressure on him, a lot less spotlight on him, not playing in that New York market, not having such high expectations. Even though I don't even think that really affected him in the past, because he played his whole career in New York and he thrived there for a long time, right? I would say he's probably one of – arguably, I mean, he's had 326 goals all for the Rangers. He's probably one of their better forwards they've ever had.
I agree with that statement, yeah. I mean,
582 points, 883 games played, all for the New York Rangers. Like, great, great career for him. And, yeah, we'll see if he has something to prove in Anaheim. That'll be an interesting experiment. I think he'll do fine there. I think he can get 30 goals this year. I think he could kind of get back on track. I think he's going to have a lot of opportunity kind of beyond that first, second line, PP1.
I mean, I look at Chris Kreider as a guy who can take on like the Tyler Toffoli role on a better roster, in my opinion. He's going to be getting first-line minutes, at least to start off. He's going to get the power play 1 minutes. He's going to get the opportunities. He's going to be a guy that they're kind of going to lean on, especially early, to help the young guys on and off the ice. And I think he can be successful at it. And I know he didn't have a great season last season. And sure, a lot of it is probably because he's getting older. But also, that entire Rangers team was just – they were old and slow outside of maybe like two or three players max. And you look at an Anaheim Ducks team where they're young, they're fast. They have Leo Carlson, Cutter Gauthier. They bring in Mikael Granlund. I know he's not super young. He's fucking old as hell, but still, though. You eventually will get back Mason McTavish when a contract gets agreed on. Troy Terry, who's in the middle of his prime, is a great 20-20-30-30 type of player for the Anaheim Ducks. So there's a lot of talent around Chris Kreider, and I think he'll thrive with a little bit of guys that have more speed in this lineup. And I don't necessarily hate the Ducks lineup either. I don't think it's playoff worthy at the moment. I think they'll be able to score goals. I think they'll be a fun team, but I think also this team might have some growing pains along the way, continuing throughout the season. And we can see them build off of the end of last season, though, too, where they start off the season strong, or they are getting towards the deadline or the last month of the season where they're 5, 6, 7 points out of a playoff spot. It's like maybe the Anaheim Ducks can make a late push if they string together some wins. But I don't know. This Anaheim Ducks team is giving me the we're 1 year away from really being a team that can go out and make a playoff push.
Yeah, I don't see them being ready to push to the playoffs this year. I still think they have some guys who are developing. They still have a lot of really young defensemen. You know, outside of Radko Gudas and Jacob Trouba, the rest of the defensemen are all very young. So like, there's definitely going to be some growing pains still. I know we've been saying this about this team for years. They've identified what they believe is their goalie of the future in Lucas Dostal. So we'll see if he can keep up that strong play. He convinced them to move on from Jeb Gibson, which is they've been very reluctant to do for years. There's been rumors, I feel like, for the last 3 or 4 years, every summer that he's been available, and they finally move him. So I think Dostal is a solid starter in the league. But yeah, I don't see the playoffs in the cards this year for the Ducks.
You know what I think, though? I think Lucas also, this is the year where he absolutely lights it up for Anaheim. I think he's going to show them and the entire NHL why they gave him the $6.5 million contract. I mean, last season, granted, he stole John Gibson's job, but even after the hot start he got off last season, he had a 3.10 goals against and a 903 save percentage with only one shutout. And I expect
not a great defensive team.
No, it was not a great defensive team. And I think this season the defense will be just a touch better. But like you said, they're super young still. Like, Olin Zellweger, you have Pavel Mintukov, Jackson Lacombe, and Drew Helleson, and you also have Tristan Lanoue, who's going to be their seventh defenseman. You have all of those guys are 24 years or younger right now. The only two guys that are 30-plus are Radko Gudas, your captain, at 35, and Jacob Trouba at 31. Everybody else, 24, 24, and then 21, 21, and 22. So I think This team is they're in a great spot though. Like, this isn't a team where if I'm an Anaheim Ducks fan, I'm sitting here and I'm like, this team, if we don't make the playoffs, it's a failure. I'm like, I just want to see this team, honestly. How many points did they have last season? They had 80 points last season. I want to see them get to that 85 benchmark, that 87 benchmark, get a few more wins, right? Instead of 35 wins, can we get to 38, 39 wins, or optimistically 40 wins, for example, right? So I think that's where the Anaheim Ducks are in, and I agree with you. I don't have them making the playoffs. I have them finishing sixth in the Pacific Division.
I also have them finishing sixth.
Moving on to the Calgary Flames, last season record 41-27-4 for 96 points, fourth in the Pacific Division. Key additions, Ivan Procefetov. I really hope I pronounced that right. Key subtractions, Dan Vladar, Anthony Manta, and Tyson Barrie. They had some busy notable moves. They signed Dustin Wolf to a $7.5 million extension, signed Mikael Backlund to a $2.5 million extension, re-signed Connor Zary to a $3.375 million extension, re-signed Morgan Frost to a $2.475 million contract. And that is about it, it looks like. So the Calgary Flames are going to be looking to make a playoff push this season.
I mean, they almost made it last year. Dustin Wolf is kind of putting the team on his back. I think that's a great contract for the player and the team. Mm-hmm. I think Dustin Wolf can be a franchise goalie, honestly. He was a Calder finalist last year, deservedly so.
Yeah,
that they could. I honestly, like, looking at the Calgary Flames roster from last year, I don't think they really had much business being in that playoff conversation.
No,
they weren't one of the worst teams in the league, even if Dustin Wolf wasn't playing outstanding. But
it would have been.
They were right in playoff contention all the way till the end of the season last year. St. Louis had like a crazy hot streak at the end. Or Calgary probably makes the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, St. Louis had a point streak of like, it was like 15 or 16 games or something like that. But
yeah,
it's crazy because they tied. St. Louis has a tiebreaker. And what sucks for Calgary too is if St. Louis just comes away with one more regulation loss or one less point, like, they're in the playoffs. Like, that's what has to hurt for the Calgary Flames. And like you said, with the roster, on paper, that team had no business having 96 points last season. But the fact that they did and the way that Dustin Wolf kind of carried the team for parts of the season really goes to show you that if he has another one of those seasons where he puts up ridiculous numbers, I think you have to start throwing him into the top 10 goaltender list or elite goaltender list. Like, I mean, last season in 53 games, played a 9.10 save percentage and a 2.64 goals against average. If we see that jump up to a 9.15 and a 2.4, like, there's going to have to be a discussion about him being a top 10 goaltender. And I get the hesitancy of a lot of people putting him in the top 10 because we saw for one season, right? We want to see it again because, I mean, he was a rookie. It happens sometimes where we see players come out of the gate super strong and then completely fall off a cliff. That's not going to happen with Dustin Wolf. Obviously, I'm not saying it's going to. But just in general, like, why a lot of people don't have him in the top 10 list. And he is that Calgary Flames team. But I will give one player a lot of credit as well. Nazem Kadri, he is their best forward, and I don't necessarily think it's really close right now. The last two seasons, 75 points in 82 games played in the 23-24 season. Then last season, he had 67 and 82 games played. And this is for a guy, he was a minus 17 with 67 points, by the way. But that's besides the point. I mean, his first year in Calgary, we were all looking at the $7 million contracts like, this is going to be fucking brutal. And he's made up for it the last two seasons. I give a lot of props to him, man.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of this forward group. Kind of a mixed bag. I will say Jonathan Huberdeau did have his best season as a Flame last year. So maybe, I mean, he'll never match, I think, what he was in Florida. I think it was just a combination of they had good teams, especially his last couple of years there when he had 115 points. I believe they won the President's Trophy that year. Their offense was really, really good. And he was also playing on the line with Alex Barkov. So that helps as well. So we knew there was going to be a drop-off when he got to Calgary, but he kind of looked like a shell of himself, you know. 62 points, 81 games last year. Can he hover on that 70-point range again? I think if he can get to 70, that's a good season out of Huberdeau. But the rest of this forward group, like, it's I really don't know what to make of it. They made a trade last year when they brought in Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost from Philly. That kind of seemed out of nowhere. I think another big question mark is, you know, what's going on with Rasmus Anderson? Are they going to trade him? Are they not going to trade him? Seems like people have kind of just written it off that they were going to trade him, and he's been in trade rumors for the last couple of years. He hasn't been moved. I do expect him to be moved this year, unless he has a change of heart and decides he wants to stay in Calgary long term.
The thing about Anderson is he did say a couple days ago that he'll always leave the door open for Calgary. So obviously it feels like that's him saying he's open to staying in Calgary, but he doesn't feel like he's going to stay in Calgary.
If they wanted him to stay, they'd have to pay a little bit more than another team. Other teams would have to pay. I mean, they do have a bit of advantage where, you know, he's played there his whole career. He lives there. He's comfortable being in Calgary. So, you know, that's always something someone's going to consider when they're trying to figure out where to live the next part of their life. Mm-hmm. So that they definitely have an advantage there, but yeah, because if they are in playoff conversations, which I think they could be, I think they could compete for that wild card spot. Do you hold on to him, or do you like just take the best offer you get at the deadline and just still push for the playoffs anyway? I'd say unless you get firm commitment that he's going to resign there, I'd say you just trade him and finally just put an end to it.
Yeah, I agree. Unless you can get some sort of extension done or word of mouth of Anderson's like, I'll sign with you guys in the off season, like long-term type shit. I just see what's out there, whatever the best packages I trade him, whether it's inside of division or whether it's across the US to the Eastern Conference. I don't really care at that point, honestly. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Rasmus Anderson. And overall with this team, like you said, I'm not crazy about their forward group. Like they can definitely be an average team goal scoring wise. And I would love to see Matt Coronato take another step, Connor Zary take another step. And if those two guys can take another step and add another 10, 15 points to their season point totals, I think this team can make the playoffs. And I think they can make the playoffs either way. I don't know. There's just something feels off about them. And I do think, though, that Dustin Wolf will hold them in a lot of games again this season. And I do believe that Dustin Wolf will put up better numbers and the Calgary Flames will still be a 90-plus point team, no doubt about it.
The one player I'm really excited about for the Flames, though, I think he should be on the team this year. I'm not 100% sure if he's going to be, is Zane Parayka. I probably said that wrong.
Yeah.
I think that dude's going to be a baller.
Yeah. I mean,
he had 107 points last year in juniors as a defenseman. He's going to be, I think he's going to be an elite offensive defenseman in this league. And I think a player like that is something the Flames desperately need.
Oh, they needed a guy like him so bad on the blue line, especially too, or just in general. Like they didn't have that one game changer. And I think Zane Parayka is that game changer.
Yeah, for sure.
He's that Rasmus Dahlin, that Cale Makar, that Quinn Hughes guy that can take over a game single-handedly too in his prime. And
I think he's a sleeper pick for the Calder this year, in my opinion.
Dude, I agree with that. And there's a lot of sleeper picks too for the Calder. Everybody talks about the big guns, and here's little Zane Parayka in Calgary that nobody talks about because, no offense, Calgary Flames, he is in Calgary, and nobody talks about Calgary. The same thing happened with Dustin Wolf until people realized that Dustin Wolf was actually a very fucking good goaltender. So I love that you brought him up. Low-key forgot about him. Sorry, guys. But, yeah, I have this team finishing fourth in the Pacific Division, and I think it will be the same story as last season. They missed out by a point or two.
I have them finishing fifth in the Pacific. I said earlier, I think really the Canucks, Flames, Ducks, and Kraken really are kind of all – I think the Kraken may be on the lower end of it. I'm not super high on the Kraken this year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think especially Calgary, Vancouver, and Anaheim are really – I think they're all going to be within a point or two of each other.
This episode is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Football is back, and there's no better way to get into the action than with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers, this one's for you. Bet just $5 and you'll score $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's right, no waiting, no gimmicks. Just place your first $5 wager and boom, $200 in bonus bets dropped right into your account if you use code THPN. That's right, but that's not all. You also get $200 off NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. That means every touchdown, every highlight, every heart-pounding moment streamed right to your screen. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use promo code THPN. That's THPN to unlock $200 in bonus bets instantly when you place your first $5 bet, plus $200 off NFL Sunday Ticket. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY, that is 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for gambling problems. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, Kansas, fees may apply in Illinois. Must be the age of 21 years or older. Age and eligibility vary by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 7 days after insurance. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/promos for details. NFL Sunday Ticket offer for new subscribers only. Auto renews until canceled. Digital games and commercial use excluded. Restrictions apply. Additional terms at youtube.com/pro/NFL Sunday Ticket/terms. Limited time offer.
All right, quick time out before we get back to the action. This episode is brought to you by W Energy. Listen, hockey's fast, and whether you're breaking down plays, yelling shoot from the couch, or just getting in a workout, you've got to stay sharp. That's where W comes in. Clean energy with zero sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or dyes. Just 150 milligrams of caffeine per serving, about 2 cups of coffee's worth to keep you locked in and ready to go. Personally, I use W before the gym, on the ice, and even when prepping content for the pod. If you need that extra spark, whether you're grinding through work, lifting, or lacing up the skates, W's got you covered. Head over to W.gg and use code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. That's W.gg, code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. Fuel up, stay locked in, and let's get back to the episode. Next up on the agenda, the Edmonton Oilers. Last season's record, 48-29-5 for 101 points, third in the Pacific Division. The additions, Isaac Howard, Curtis Lazar, Andrew Mangiapane, Evander Kane. Evander Kane's supposed to be in key subtractions. My bad, guys. Key subtractions, Evander Kane, Jeff Skinner, John Klingberg, Connor Brown, and Connor Carrick. Their only notable moves, they signed Evan Bouchard to a 4x$10.5 million contract extension and signed the second worst contract of the offseason, Trent Frederick, to an 8x$3.85 million
contract. It's not that bad. I mean, it's a long contract, but I think in a couple of years, that salary number is going to be like nothing.
Okay. Salary wise, I agree. I think that 3.85, that's fine for a guy like Trent Frederick. 8 years for Trent Frederick, I'm sorry, dude.
I think they just like not having to worry about having to address another depth piece, because you give him another 1 or 2 year deal. You know, the Oilers have had problems with their depth, and they view him, they must view him as a good depth piece, good third, fourth line player. And they're like, you know what, we like this guy. We don't want to keep adding new depth players every couple of years, so we'll just get him on an 8 year deal and not have to worry about him for 8 years.
That's fair, and it's not like he's a 30-year-old. He's 27 years old, so this will be up when he's 34, 35, whatever. So I get the thought process, but I still don't like the contract, though. I don't know. I mean, I totally get where you're coming from with it, et cetera. You mentioned earlier that you felt like the Oilers got worse this offseason. I don't mean to throw you on the spot or anything like that.
Well, they didn't address their goaltending. That's why.
Fair enough. That's fair.
That was their big. I think their goaltending was worse last year than it was a couple years ago. I think this is a very well coached team. I think losing Connor Brown will hurt a little bit more than people would think too. I'm not sure. Yeah, you did have him on the keys attractions. Klingberg was pretty good for them in the playoffs last year too. I'm not saying that's a big regular season loss. Evander Kane didn't play at all last year until the playoffs, and he disappeared when it mattered the most. So,
yep, and he took stupid penalties.
Yeah, I'm just not as high on the Oilers. I just don't really feel great about them as a team, especially, you know, given that Connor McDavid still hasn't resigned there yet. Kind of gives me the vibes that he's not 100% confident either, necessarily, right?
Right.
Because when a star player like that, like, it isn't. I get he's not in a rush, and he's going to get whatever he asks for. That says something to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do like the addition of Mondra Mangiapane. I think that was a good veteran pickup. I thought he was good in Washington last year. I think he'll be a good depth scoring piece for them. But I still don't trust Stuart Skinner, and Pickard's a fine backup. But the fact that he was starting games in the Stanley Cup final was kind of scary.
Yeah. I want to circle back to the Connor McDavid stuff real quick. We haven't touched base on it in a few weeks, it feels like, and Elliot Freeman on his most recent episode of the 30 Stoss podcast did say that we could be looking at McDavid taking a $2 by $14 million deal or something in that range.
Oh, wow. I'll be
with Edmonton.
That you would tell me that he's definitely going to trust UFA them 2 years.
You know, that also tells me that is telling me that either get your shit together, Edmonton, or I'm fucking gone. That's exactly what it, I don't think it's more obvious. Like, this is, he could sit there and take a 6-7 year deal like his buddy Leon Draisaitl, or take a 4 year deal like his counterpart and Evan Bouchard, but he's like, no, I'm not doing that. And I don't blame him, honestly. And I mean, at the end of the day, this is about winning hockey games, not about building friendships, right? That's just me, though. Maybe that's a little harsh.
But I think they have the right coach to give them the Stanley Cup final. But the goaltending, to me, is still my biggest question mark about this team. And I'm sure they called about John Gibson. I don't think they have the draft capital or the assets really to go out and get him. They don't really have much of a prospect pool. Like Matthew Savoy, is he going to be on the team this year? He only played a couple games last year, did not play at all in the playoffs for them. You know, that's why they traded Ryan McLeod away for him, right? They lose a quality depth piece in McLeod. He goes and has a career season in Buffalo. Mind you, I don't think he would have had that season that he had in Buffalo and Edmonton, because he wouldn't have gotten the opportunities that he had gotten in Buffalo. But Matthew Savoy, he was supposed to be an elite prospect. He still hasn't made it to the NHL yet. I think there's going to be pressure on him. You know, they end up trading for Isaac Howard just because he could play right now. And they need young players on cheap contracts in their lineup because there's a cap crunched right now. They have about $225,000 in free cap space. This team to me is, I mean, it's cup or bust. It's going to be cup or bust everywhere. You have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, in my opinion. And I don't know if they can make it back to the cup final this year.
It's going to be tough to make it back to the cup final with this roster. And again, it's also going to be tough because you've been to back-to-back cup finals appearances too. And I agree. I think the goaltending it's rough. I don't like Stuart Skinner at all. And they did call on John Gibson, like you said, but they ended up circling back to the Red Wings a few weeks later and calling on both their goaltending prospects in Kosa. And
that would cost an astronomical amount to get one of those guys.
Yes. And the Detroit Especially Red Kosa. Wings.
Yeah.
And the Red Wings, they didn't want to trade Augustine at all. They were listening on Kosa, but they were asking for Isaac Howard in return to start any talks. And the Oilers obviously are like, are you fucking out of your mind? And, you know, and nothing really materialized out of that. And that's also because teams know that the Oilers are looking for a goaltender. They're going to up the price because they're
for sure. And they know they don't have a lot of assets to give. So they're going to go after the top assets that they have available.
Right.
Right. Because with Stuart Skinner, I feel like you're either getting like he's playing lights out or he's like you're pulling him in the third period.
Dude,
that's how he was in the playoffs.
Yeah, we talked about this a few weeks ago where in the playoffs against Vegas, he was absolutely phenomenal against Dallas.
Two or three shutouts in that series against Vegas? I think he had at least two.
Yeah, he had at least two. I think he had back-to-back games with a shutout.
I think games one and two, they were shutouts.
Mm-hmm. And then against Dallas, he's lights out. Then against Florida, he was on and off. Some games he looked good, other games he didn't. And in the first round was a fucking complete mess for him, man. So Stuart Skinner needs to be more consistent. That's my biggest question mark. Like, I don't love the Oilers depth, but again, when you have McCabe, when you have Draisaitl, when you have Bouchard, when you have Matthias Ekholm, Jake Wallman was solid for them in a playoff.
Oh, he was a great pickup last year for them. It was a really good move by the Oilers at the deadline. Yeah.
So
I mean, I honestly don't really mind their blue line that much. Darnell Nurse or that contract we're going to talk about for the end of time. It's an awful contract. It ain't going to get better anytime soon. It's untradeable. They'll make the best of it. But Matthias Ekholm, stud. I think he's still got a couple good years left in him. He's getting a bit on the older side, but he's hungry for that cup, and he knows he's got a chance. So,
where do you have them finishing in the division this year?
I think they will be third in the division again, like they were last year. I'm going to be a deja vu for my top three teams in the Pacific this year.
Yeah, I had them finishing third in the division too. I agree with you. I think they got a little bit worse because they didn't address the goaltending need. I think there is a team that we're going to talk about in a second that is just going to edge them out for that second spot, which is the Los Angeles Kings. Last season's record, 48-25-9 for 105 points. Second in the Pacific Division. Key additions, Corey Perry, Cody Ceci, Joel Armia, Brian Dumoulin, and Anton Forsberg. Key subtractions, Vladislav Gavrikov, David Riddick, Trevor Lewis, and Tanner Chenault. And they didn't really do anything notable besides signing Kuzmenko to the
very quiet, 4.5. I'd say pretty quiet free agency. Everyone was laughing on them for that Cody Ceci contract, though.
I still am, though. I mean, okay. I'm going to kind of – LA Kings fans, before I get into the positive stuff, I'm going to dog on Ken Holland for his defensive stuff.
He loves – he goes against his guys, man.
Cody Ceci, 4x4.5. And then you have Brian Dumoulin, who is supposed to be the Gavrikov replacement at a $3.4 million deal at the 24 years old. Oof, that's rough. Okay, the LA Kings, though. Okay, let's get back to the positives. I think they're going to be a team that's going to score goals. And this team isn't necessarily known from scoring goals from time to time. Although at the end of last season, I got fucking killed for this when I said that LA Kings offense was boring and they weren't able to score a lot. At the end of last season, They were the highest scoring team in the league, guys. Like this team was able to score with Byfield, with Kempe, with Kopitar, who by the way is retiring after this season. Kevin Fiala, Philip Deneau, these guys can score goals, and this team is a team that is underrated at times too. Right, they get overshadowed in the Pacific by Vegas, by Edmonton. So now LA's coming in here, and we're probably going to get a part five of Edmonton versus LA in the fucking playoffs, dude.
Yeah. And last year was probably their best chance to finally exercise their demons and finally move past Edmonton. But I really don't like Jim Hiller as a coach. I'm sure a lot of Kings fans don't really like him because he failed. I would say they didn't play great defensively. They made a lot of mistakes, but the coach failed to make adjustments. He got out-coached by Chris Knobloch. Chris Knobloch's one of the best coaches in the league. So, I mean, he's going to out-coach most people, I would say. But, you know, LA has a great team. They have really good depth. This is your last year with Anze Kopitar. Sucks to see him go. He's a legend. Mm-hmm. Drew Doughty isn't getting any younger. And Darcy Kemper had a Vezina-caliber season last year. If it wasn't for Connor Hellebuyck having like the greatest goaltending season of all time, Darcy Kemper could have won the Vezina.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you're going to get another year like that out of him. So I think it was just wasted opportunities. I think they have a really good chance to beat Edmonton this year. I'd be shocked if they didn't end up playing each other in the first round again. One of these teams would have to have either completely shock me and win the division, which I don't see how anyone could beat Vegas right now, or fall out of the top three, which I don't see happening with Edmonton or LA.
Yeah, first off, going over to Darcy Kemper, did you know he had 12 penalty minutes last season?
Yeah, he's very active in the crease with his stick, yeah.
Yeah, it happens. You're looking at a team like LA with Kuzmenko and all of these guys and going over to the blue line with Drew Doughty, who's he's getting older, but you have Mikey Anderson, you have Brant Clark, who's an absolute stud. And like you said, with Darcy Kemper, are you going to be able to repeat that same season? I don't think so with the 202 goals against and a 922 save percentage in 50 games played. Granted, we're not saying that he's going to go back to how he was in Washington where he couldn't stop a beach ball, but he is due some regression. If he puts up another season like that, of course, he's going to end up winning the Vezina. Connor Hellebuyck has another season like he just did, because the numbers between the two goaltenders side by side were very similar. It wasn't like Connor Hellebuyck blew him out of the water statistically. Connor Hellebuyck had a goals against of barely below two. Darcy Kemper's was barely above two. So I do like this team in terms of their goaltending is super, super strong. I like their ceiling on their blue line, but I don't like the floor of the blue line, if that makes sense. And I think in their four group, this team's going to be exciting. They're a very locked down four group. They can play a great two-way game. Quinton Byfield, I'm expecting to have a massive season. Kempe is a baller. Fiala is great. Alex Laferriere is phenomenal for them. Kuzmenko went on a heater for them at the end of last season after acquiring him at the deadline. So I expect big things from this team. If I'm being completely honest with you, the only thing holding them back, like you said earlier, is their coaching, Jim Hiller. He single-handedly lost them that series. They were up 2-0. They were riding a high. You come out and you almost blow a game one lead in front of your home.
That was just Connor McDavid just being Connor McDavid that game.
Yeah, and then luckily, I think it was Philip Deneau scored the goal with like 40 seconds left or something like that.
Crazy game.
That was crazy. And then in game two, I believe they killed the Oilers.
It was not even a close game, yeah.
And at that point, I know it's a seven-game series. I didn't think it could happen, but I was sitting here. I was like, the fucking LA Kings are about to win in five games against the Oilers. And I picked the Kings to win that series. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, brah fucking oh. And then Jim Hiller happened in game three. I don't want to make you guys relive that or whatever, but I think that he is a weaker coach. Can he prove us wrong? Yes, but he also literally cost the series. So I don't know. We'll see with them, I guess.
I think they'll get a chance to get past the hump. I think they're going to have to defeat the Oilers if they ever want to move forward.
They're going to have to, man. Like, in order to make a playoff run, they're going to have to play the Oilers, because you look at the rest of the Pacific Division, they are, I don't think they're better than Vegas. I think Vegas kind of runs away with the Pacific, to be honest with you. You have LA and Edmonton, and I don't think Calgary is a better team than Edmonton or LA, and obviously same with Vancouver, Anaheim, Seattle, and San Jose. So yeah, there's that.
Yeah, like I said, there's like different tiers. Like Vegas is kind of up here on their own, then Edmonton and LA are together, and then Calgary, Vancouver, Anaheim, Seattle kind of ish, and then San Jose kind of down at the bottom.
Yeah, where do you have LA finishing in the division?
A second place. I think they'll be neck and neck with the Oilers. I don't think it really matters to either team who gets home ice advantage, because it hasn't mattered the last few years. So,
yeah, I agree. I have LA finishing second in the Pacific Division as well, and unless something happens in terms of injuries with either side, I think it will be LA 2, Edmonton 3. Moving on here to the San Jose Sharks. Last season's record, 20-50-12 for 52 points, eighth in the Pacific Division. Key additions: they are building a great team from 2018. Jeff Skinner, Ryan Reeves, Nick Leddy, Dmitry Orlov, John Klingberg, Alex Nedeljkovic, Philip Kurashev, and Adam Gaudet. Key subtractions: Mark Edward Vlasic, Alexander Georgiev, and Henry Thrander.
I just want to remind people, this team gave up an asset for Ryan Reeves.
That is also true. That's true. Brutal. And they also signed William Eklund to a 3x$5.6 million contract extension. What a steal that was. The San Jose Sharks, I know a lot of times we like to talk about, now, the Buffalo Sabres, they're a team that plays hockey. I think the San Jose Sharks are a team that plays hockey with a ton of potential on their floor group. I think their blue line is obviously unfinished.
Oh, yeah. And they just signed a bunch of vets to one-year deals just to kind of put a blue line together, because I think Mike Greer clearly knows that their young defenseman prospects are not ready for the big show yet.
Right.
But this forward core is going to be kind of nutty if all these players become what they should be. You know, Macklin Celebrini, he's kind of becoming a face of the NHL, right?
Yeah.
He's a lot of respect from a lot of great NHL players already. Like we talked about last week, that player poll that went out where a lot of the players I asked viewed Celebrini as like the next big star in the NHL. I thought he had an outstanding rookie season last year. Will Smith is just going to keep getting better. They just drafted Michael Misa, who I think is also going to be a stud. Just those three alone. And don't forget, you also have William Eklund as well, another really great player. I think he's a bit underrated because, you know, he plays on a not-so-great team. But that kid has a shot. He's a great player.
Yeah, you look at everybody on their forward group. Okay, I don't know about everybody, but their top six to be exact. Macklin Celebrini, like you said, he is – becoming the face of the NHL. I love Will Smith. I'm on this wagon, and I've been saying it all offseason. This kid is going to break out this season. I want to remind everybody, because I don't know how much you guys are from a year ago, if you guys are newer, etc. I was smashing the William Eklund hype train last offseason. I was like, this kid is going to be a stud. And what did he do? He put a 58 points in 77 games played and put the league on notice. Will Smith's going to do that. Okay.
Putting the league on notice is one thing. I think they'd be putting the league on notice if I made the playoffs this year, which shocked the world. Okay,
Dude, if they make the playoffs, I would buy a Jeff Skinner San Jose Sharks.
Same. Same. Okay. I'll buy a Ryan Reeves one.
I like that. That would be fucking insane. But let's be realistic here. They're just focused on development here with a lot of their guys. Tyler Toffoli has been a big help for them. Michael Misa, he's going to be a superstar. Not just a star, not elite. He's going to be a superstar. And I think that this team is going from a 52-point team to, let's say, a 60-point team. Yeah, there it is. Like, dude,
yeah, I still expect them to be towards the bottom of the standings. I think this is going to be a situation where a lot of the young players, they're going to be a fun team to watch because they're going to be in a lot of high-scoring games, I think, because their defense doesn't really blow me away. They still got to build up that blue line. They have some good prospects on the way. You know, Sam Dickinson, he ended up missing almost all of last season. He didn't really play that much. Yeah. No, I'm reading that wrong. Sorry. Just ignore me. Just ignore me. Okay. I'm speaking nonsense.
Okay.
I mean, they bring in Orlov and Klingberg on short-term. Orlov was awful, I thought, last year for the Carolina Hurricanes, especially in the playoffs. I thought he was just horrible. Nick Leddy, another. But they have a bunch of these vets that are just stopgaps, like literal stopgaps. So I think they're going to continue to build out that blue line, I think, in the coming years, whether it be through the draft or free agency. They have their goaltender of the future in Yaroslav Askarov. I think he'll have an up and down year as well, just not on a great team. It's going to be tough defensively for this team.
It's going to be very tough defensively. And I do like Mike Greer's thinking with the blue line, like you brought up, where just giving a lot of guys, older vets, just 1 year deals worth like $3 million, $4 million. And RIP Askarov, because he's going to be facing like 45 shots a game and he'll have a goals against of like 3-3, but his save percentage will be at 900. It's going to be that type of stat line for him. But a goaltender who has a ton of untapped potential that I think he'll eventually reach. So the San Jose Sharks team, they're going to have, again, a rough season, and I still have them finishing eighth in the Pacific Division.
I also do as well, but I think the future is very bright, and I think in a couple of years, I can really see them being a really good playoff team.
Yeah, Seattle Kraken, we'll get to them in a second. San Jose Sharks fans, it's okay. Didn't mean to be so negative. The team just isn't great.
I think most Sharks fans are excited about the future.
Honestly. Oh, I would be excited too. I would be so excited too. Moving on to the Seattle Kraken, last season record 35-41-6 for 76 points, finishing seventh in the Pacific Division. Key additions: Ryan Lindgren, Frederick Goudreau, Joseph Valeno, who they eventually, I think, waived or something like that. And then Mason Marchment. They did not subtract anybody, at least any key subtractions, that is. More notable moves: they signed Josh Mahura and Cal Fleury to extensions. They re-signed Ty Carte and re-signed Kapokako and Riker Evans as well. That Kapokako one, obviously, is the big one, which was $3.5 million.
Yeah, Seattle.
I think they're in limbo right now. I don't think there's necessarily a direction with the Seattle.
Yeah, I don't think they really have a plan, right? Mm-hmm. They took another center this year in the draft, which honestly, with the way they've been the last few years, doesn't really surprise me. They take Jake O'Brien, 8th overall in the draft this year. Everyone was screaming at them to take a defenseman. I thought they were taking Mirka. They did not. I don't think center was really an issue for this team. They have a ton of young centers. They have Manny Beniers. They have Shane Wright. Those are one and two centers right there. Mm-hmm. They also have Caden Berkeley Catton they drafted a couple years ago. And then Jake O'Brien. I'm assuming some of these guys are going to have to move over and play wing at some point.
Somebody's going to have to.
Yeah, there's just too many centers. You know, you have Chandler Stephenson on a long-term deal. He is a pure center, right? Mm-hmm. So you keep drafting all these centers, and, you know, they desperately need a defenseman. Look at the, they went out and got Brandon Montour last season, which was a desperate shot in the arm they need, and I think that was a good signing for them. But they did bring in – I think they traded for Ryan Lindgren this year and then mm-hmm. extended him as well. We'll see how he is. I think he's – a fine average defenseman, but Joey DeCord. Oh, no,
they ended up, I think they signed, they just plain out signed him, I think.
No, I think they, I think he got, he was acquired in a trade. How did he get
traded then?
Oh, wait, okay. Well, cap wages is saying it was an extension. Sorry, they confused me. Oh, yeah, no, it says trade on there, yeah.
Well, when did the trade happen?
I'm trying to find it, but it says...
No, I think there was. I think he got traded from the Avalanche. That was.
Yeah, but I'm saying like I'm looking at like cap wages, and it says like acquired trade. So that's what led me to believe it was they traded for him, then extended him.
I think it was from the Avalanche. Yeah, they ended up fucking doing it at the trade deadline. I fucking wrote an article about it. Jesus fuck. Oh, sorry guys.
He got traded to the Avalanche though. Now. But it's that it's saying that he got traded to the Kraken on cap wages, but I don't see a trade. So that's a mistake on their website.
Yeah, I think it was a signing. Okay, it's fucking us up. Damn, whatever. Yeah. Either way, though, yeah, this team, they're in limbo. I like a couple of their pieces. And going over to your points about the centers and stuff like that, Shane Wright did play about 22.5% of his time at right wing. So maybe they move him over the right wing, and we'll see what happens with the rest of the prospects. Because like you said, they drafted Jake O'Brien. There was no need to go out and draft a center and Jake O'Brien. Honestly, I know I ended up having in my mock draft them drafting Jake O'Brien, but the logical thing to do was to go out and draft like Radim Mirka, for example, mm-hmm. at 8th overall, and they didn't do that. So, and I'm not necessarily crazy about their blue line either. Outside of really Vince Dunn and Brandon Montour, I don't necessarily think it's great. I think Adam Larson is a second pair defenseman on a okay team, but he's right now probably going to be the first pair defenseman. He'll probably end up honestly being second pair now I think about it, with Brandon Montour over there on the right side. But the Ryan Lindgren sign-in, not a huge fan of, but I get, like, if he's playing third pair minutes, he's okay, but you don't want him playing second or first line minutes, if we're being honest with you. That's just me though.
Well, another thing with all the centers, I'll just add one more point to this, is mm-hmm. you know, people are complaining like, oh, like Matty Beniers and Shane Wright like aren't where they need to be yet, right, at the centers, right? But when you have this many and they happen to keep rotating and you're preventing them from getting the ice time that they need to develop into complete centers, it's going to hold them back, because everyone talks about, you know, Beniers and how he's regressed since his rookie year, and I think that's part of it.
Yeah, you need room for a lot of players to develop into – players that can compete at a high level. You don't need a skilled player as your fourth line center. Like, he's not going to develop that way because he's not getting a ton of ice mm-hmm. time down there. He's not getting opportunities on the first power play unit, et cetera.
Well, so, then they're not getting surrounded by, like, actual wingers as well. Right. Too, right? Like, I like when they traded for Kaapo Kakko last year. I thought that was a smart move to address mm-hmm. that. Like, get some good quality wingers, you know, to play alongside your young centers. And I think that's what they're trying to do when they traded for Mason Marchment, also from Dallas.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's Jason Botterill, well, they just signed him as a GM. Excuse me. Sorry mm-hmm. about that. Disregard that point I was going to make. But Seattle, in terms of going in their direction with the forward group, like you brought up, Kaapo Kakko, I was a huge fan of that. You were a huge fan of them bringing in Kakko, because they needed young wingers. It wasn't just they need young forwards. They just needed a young wingers to play with Matty Beniers and Shane Wright. And Shane Wright looked great for them all the last season. Matty Beniers still hasn't looked like his rookie self, but I really hope that he ends up finally stepping up his game. Kaapo Kakko looks phenomenal in a Seattle Kraken uniform all the entire second half of the season. Jordan Eberle is a solid guy. Jared McCann, of course, can give you 30 goals a season. So there's talent around these guys right now. And like you brought up, acquiring Mason Marchment from Dallas, over the offseason. That's their way of trying to at least get capable NHL wingers around these centers and Beniers, Wright, and Stevenson, and with your other centers coming up throughout the pipeline. We'll see what happens. Do they become trade chips for wingers? Do they become, you know, some of these centers move over to the wing and now you have all of them on the team, but they're all filling up the top nine? Like, we'll see. The future only tell in terms of where this team will be in the next few years. I don't necessarily like the way that this team is going, and we haven't even mentioned it yet, but the goaltending with Philip Grubauer and Joey DeCord. I like Joey DeCord. Philip Grubauer has not been necessarily great for the Kraken by any means. Yeah,
I would say he's been bad.
Last season, he had a 3.5 goals against and an 8.75.
Well, I mean, this year, like, Jason Botter was literally asked, like, why didn't you move on from him? And he had to defend him, right? He's like, well, we believe in him, right? That's not something you normally get asked.
No, and with Joey DeCord, though, in 57 games, he had a 2.75 and a 9.06 save percentage. He's clearly Seattle's guy. He's clearly the better goaltender. And I think Seattle's in a much better spot. I know this is going to sound crazy right now. I think they're in a much better spot if they have a couple better defensemen and if they have a backup goaltender who can actually stop a hockey puck. I mean, I wouldn't want to ask Joey DeCord to play 60 games a season and fucking just ride him until the wheels fall off.
I do think this will be Philip Grubauer's last year in Seattle. I think after this year, I think they're going to buy him out.
I think a buyout has to be an option. I really would have thought that they would have bought him out after this season or done something with him.
I guess the way they looked at it, they didn't really have a replacement for him. So they were like, yeah, we'll keep you for another year. I guess that's it.
Yeah, I mean,
that don't makes forget, sense. They got Matt Murray in the AHL. Come on. I didn't even know he was still playing.
Yeah. Okay. So where do you have them finishing the division?
Seventh. I don't think they're going to be that great this year.
Yeah, I have them finishing, I believe, seventh as well. Just, I don't think they're going to be better than a 76-point team, in my opinion. Next up here, the Vancouver Canucks. Last season's record, 38-30-14 for 90 points, fifth in the Central Division. Key additions, Pierre, Oliver Joseph, and Evander Kane. And key subtractions, Pius Suter. And their more notable moves, signed Thatcher Demko to a 3x$8.5 million contract extension and Connor Garland to a 6x$6 million contract extension. A lot of people expecting this team to bounce back. I think that Pettersson can bounce back too. I think he can he has to. I mean, they're paying him like an elite player in this league.
And they had a chance to move him last year. And they did. They were getting – I heard they got legitimate offers. And they decided to keep him, and now he has that no movement clause kick in. They cannot move him.
No, they can't.
So they clearly like him. They're sticking with him. Big win for them this offseason was also keeping Brock Besser. I think if they didn't keep Brock Besser, this is a very different team we're talking about. He's a very important player to their team, probably their best pure scorer. And he only did have 25 goals last year, but, you know, he scored 40 goals before. I think that was a big move to keep him as well. Connor Garland, I think, is a really underrated player also in the league. The Evander Kane trade makes no freaking sense to me still to this day. Like, because that was like, you're doing Edmonton a favor, right, in trading for Kane, because that I would say that was pretty much a cap dump, right?
Yeah.
Like, I was surprised by these teams, like, actually getting assets. For like, they got a fourth round pick, which I think most times when you're dumping a contract like that, you're giving them the player and a pick just to take the salary, right?
Yeah. I hated that fucking trade, man. I don't get what Vancouver was doing there. Like you said, usually you're taking on an extra draft pick to take on a Evander Kane contract, et cetera, stuff like that. I really do enjoy, well, I guess I do really like the Connor Garland extension at $6 million. It's going to be a steal, man. He does everything for the Canucks. He plays a full 200-foot game. He plays aggressive. He plays with a lot of heart, a lot of passion, and he can also produce offensively, defensively, do it all. And bringing up Elias Pettersson, they're paying him $11.6 million to give you 50 to 60 points last season. No, that's not going to happen this season. He's going to bounce back because, like you said, he has to. And like also you said, retaining Brock Besser, man. If they don't retain him, this team is lucky to get to 500. Like, that's how much of an impact he has on this team, genuinely. Mm-hmm. And the word was out that he really wanted to stay in Vancouver, and he ended up calling, I think it was Quinn Hughes it was, and Brock Besser was like, man, like, was really upset that Vancouver wasn't going to retain him, and the next day they got stuff done. That was
actually, I heard he took a bit of less money to stay in Vancouver as well.
He did. He wanted to be in Vancouver.
I think the one thing with this team that you're not going to escape probably for another year or two is Quinn Hughes. Are they going to move him? He is a UFA in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Can they get him extended long term? I think that will be all the talk next summer. Right now, I don't think you're going to really hear too much about it, though. But, you know, they keep Thatcher Demko. Also, that was another kind of a bit of a head scratcher. They can move him this year. I kind of saw it as maybe, you know, he rebounds, has a full couple healthy seasons, and shows, like, they go, because he was a Vezina candidate a few years ago, right? And, you know, he only played 20 games last year, so not really a whole lot to go off of him for him. They ended up trading Artur Shelovs to Pittsburgh, which was I thought was a little bit of a head scratcher too. But I guess when you give Demko that extension, you're kind of saying that's our guy. We're going to go trade you a place where you can play, right? But I think Demko can bounce back. I think just health is really important for him. Vancouver, to me, is a team that's kind of in limbo. They're not bad enough to be like a lottery team, but they're not really good enough to be a legitimate playoff contender. And I'm starting to think that year they had a couple years ago when they won the division was just a really big fluke.
I'm starting to think that a little bit too. I don't know what to make of this team. Like, that season, Elias Pettersson had 102. Sorry, he had 89 points. What was it? 23. Yeah, it was 23, 24. He had 89 points. The year before, he had 102 points. So I can see why they gave him the extension, because even in the year where the Canucks were better, he still put up some really superstar type numbers. And I don't know if this team is necessarily going to be better than last season. I mean, last season they put up 90 points, by the way. And I don't know if this team can get, you know, probably 95 points to make the playoffs in the Western Conference, to be honest with you. Like,
well, I think this last year, the chatter with JT Miller and Elias Pettersson really did affect their play. And I think once that they finally put that behind them, they started playing more consistent hockey. I think they're a sleeper team to honestly be a wild card team. I think they're going to be right in that bubble with, you know, teams like Utah and St. Louis, I think, for wild card two. Mm-hmm. In the West, it wouldn't shock me at all to see them. I think right now I have Utah getting the second spot, but I could definitely make an argument also for Vancouver getting that spot as well. I think it's going to be really tight up to the end of the year. And I think Vancouver's kind of in a weird spot where they're not bad enough to get a franchise-altering player, right? Because a lot of people say they have that already in Quinn Hughes. And as long as you have a guy like that, you shouldn't be that bad, right? But they're also not good enough to, like, okay, they're playing Vegas in the first round. They're getting their ass kicked, right? They're losing in five games, right?
Well, how long before Quinn Hughes is out of Vancouver too?
Well, yeah. I mean, I already mentioned that earlier. Like, that's going to, I think, not next summer. I think that's going to be a big offseason talking point, is because he'll be eligible to sign a contract extension. Do they get that done right away? I would say probably not.
It depends, I guess. I don't know.
He hasn't made it the secret that he wants to play with his brothers either.
No, I mean, obviously, like, him and Jack and Luke have all stated that they want to play together at one point. And
I mean, one team already has two of them, so that would make getting one, the third one over there seems a lot simpler getting the other two somewhere else.
And he's a UFA in two seasons. So, and it's close. It is close. Mm-hmm. So, overall, I don't have this team in the playoffs. I still have them finishing fifth in the Pacific Division. Like you said, it's going to be tight all the way up until the finish line, the end of the season. And they could honestly miss the playoffs by even just like 2, 3, 4, 5 points, depending on really where that playoff line is.
Yeah, I got them finishing fourth in division. I think it's going to be really tight.
Moving on here to the last team, the Vegas Golden Knights. Last season record 50-22-10 for 110 points first in the Pacific Division. Key additions, Mitch Marner, Brandon Saad, Jeremy Lauzon, and Colton Sissons. Key subtractions, Nicholas Hag, Nicholas Hua, Ilya Samsonov, Tanner Pearson, and Victor Olofsson. That no other notable moves except, of course, the signing trade that got them Mitch Marner, and they sent over Nicholas Hua. Just a one-for-one swap. Man, this team, when you figure out, when you ask yourself, Vegas can keep doing what they're doing, they keep answering the bell and they say, yes, the fuck we can.
This team, I don't even know where to start with this team. That forward core is insane.
It is.
You're going to have Mitch Marner and Jack Eichel on the same line.
Did you see the play that they had last night?
I did not.
It was mint.
Yeah, once those two like figure out how to play together, they're going to be scary. Barbashev's probably going to be in that top line with them. Really good complementary piece, I would say. He had 35 goals last year. We kind of came out of nowhere for them. I expect him to have another year like that this year. I can see him getting 40 goals for sure. But their depth, man, is so good. Like William Karlsson's a great second line player. Mark Stone, Riley Smith, like even that third line and Thomas Hertl, Saad and Dorofeev, man, like. This team is really deep at forward. Defense as well. Their top four, man. Their top four is Brady McNabb, Shea Theodore, Noah Hanifin, and Shea Theodore. I mean, are two great defensemen. And then, you know, Zach Whitecloud's a serviceable fourth. Their bottom pair, a little bit of question marks for it. But this forward core is just so crazy to me. I think it kind of makes up for some vulnerabilities on the defense.
It is – it's mind-blowing. I look at Vegas, there's no way, especially after the Barkov injury, that they should not be favorites, preseason favorites to win the Stanley Cup. Like, you brought up all of their depth. Mitch Marner and Jack Eichel, by the way, are both probably going to set career highs in points this season. Mitch Marner probably will set a career high in assists. Eichel probably in goals and assists, or et cetera. You guys get the fucking point.
I think we're going to see a different version of Mitch Marner, I think. He's going to have a lot of less pressure on him. I think he's very happy where he is. You know, I think he's in a much better mental space in Vegas than he was in Toronto. And I think that will really be a big game changer for him. Not that he wasn't already incredible in Toronto. Like last year, all the shit he had to put up with, and he still had 102 points. You know, his best year of his career.
Right. You're going to get a Mitch Marner version that, honestly... He might be the most confident he's ever been playing with guys that have been there, done that before, with Jack Eichel, with Barbashev, with Mark Stone, with Tomas Hertl, like all these guys that have accomplished a lot in the league, that have been in the league for the last 10 years with himself too. Like, this is going to be a big season for Mitch Marner. I mean, last season he set a career high in assists in 75. I could see a world where he gets 80 assists playing next to Jack Eichel, and those two are going to be absolutely ridiculously disgusting together. And you brought up the blue line. Their blue line is still one of the best in the league, at least their top four to be exact. Noah Hanifin and Zach Whitecloud as your second pair is absolute mint. And, of course, the goaltending with Adin Hill is absolutely really, really good too. I wouldn't necessarily call it like elite status.
Adin Hill is the right goalie for that team.
He is the right goalie, correct. And this team is just so dangerous, man. Like, I don't see a world where this team doesn't at least get to the conference finals.
Yeah, I think this team is cup or bust. I think Vegas, pretty much their whole existence has been cup or bust.
Pretty much, so, yeah.
I think the biggest thing for them is just staying healthy.
Let's just avoid the injury bug, although we all know Mark Stone will be on the LTIR.
Well, they can't do that this year.
You can't do that anymore. Yeah, Mark Stone, fucking blow somebody. I don't know. Vegas, right now they're my cup favorite, though, in the entire league, genuinely.
Yeah, I think they have a very good chance to win the Stanley Cup. Like I said, way at the top of the episode, Barkov getting hurt changes a lot of stuff. For me, a lot of stuff. And I think Vegas can take advantage of the opportunity. They kind of got shell-shocked, I think, by the Oilers last year. I think they kind of want to prove that was a mistake, and they clearly weren't playing their best hockey at that moment. Like, they outplayed in every asset of the game last year in that playoff series against the Oilers. But this is, I think, a very confident team, and I expect them to kind of roll this regular season.
Yeah, I expect this team to kind of cruise through the regular season, get that first spot in the Pacific Division by a decent margin, and then go into the playoffs rested, healthy, and ready to win a Stanley Cup and bring the second Stanley Cup to Vegas in the last eight seasons. So, well, it'd be the last four seasons or whatever, but the 8 years of their existence so far. So, yes, of course, I just spoil it. I do have them finishing first in the Pacific Division.
Yeah, no, I think they will win the division as well. I'd be shocked if they didn't.
That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, make sure to head down to the description below to check out all of our social media, as well as subscribe to the notification bell. Thank you guys for being here. New episodes out every single Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, and we'll see you guys in our next episode.